Welcome, everyone. My name's Tuffy Morvitzer. I am a campaigner for the Goongar Environment Centre, and I'll be facilitating the meeting tonight. Firstly, I'd like to do an acknowledgement of country. We're meeting tonight here on the lands of the Woiwurrung Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and I pay my respects to elders past and present. I extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are joining us here today, especially Marge Thorpe over here, who's come all the way back from Noongar country to talk to you all today. Sovereignty was never ceded, and GECKO stands with you in your fight for justice. So since 1993, GECKO has sought to protect and restore the forests of East Gippsland. And we have a long, proud history of direct action to achieve this. In 1997, we ran the longest forest blockade in Australian history. It lasted for 5 years and had over 500 arrests. It resulted in Gulungulk being added to national parks, integrated into national park. In 2021, after the Black Summer fires burnt through 80% of the forested area in East Gippsland and logging commenced immediately after, GECKO launched the Defend Erinunda blockade to protect one of the few remaining unburnt refuges. The blockade lasted for 5 months, had over 15 people charged, and combined with the court cases of Environment East Gippsland and Wildlife for the Central Highlands, meant that this critical unburnt refuge is now still standing. Yeah. Given this refuge's higher elevation status, it may be one of the final place where species are able to survive in a warming climate. So it's very, very important. Can the people who were part of that Defend Erinunda blockade stand up, if you're in the room? I know there's a few of you in here. Great. Wait. Keep standing up. No. Keep standing up. Can anyone who has done surveying for threatened species in logging coops please stand up as well and stay standing? Okay. With the new anti-protest laws coming through in May, these people may potentially face a year imprisonment or $21,000 in fines. You can stand down now. Sit down. Stand down now. The forest faces impossible challenges with logging and climate change. As we saw with the blockade up at the Erinunda Plateau, protest remains a critical tool to prevent immediate and irreversible harm. Many other movements face similar challenges, and so we want to make a meeting space where we can see, hear, and commit to supporting each other and the world that we live in. To feel in our spirit that we are not alone in the actions that we take. To build that solidarity that is so crucial to winning. So for the first speaker, we'll hear from Natalie Hogan from Environment Justice Australia.
It's nice to see so many of you off the screen and in person, but for those of you who I don't know, my name's Natalie and I'm a lawyer at Environmental Justice Australia. And prior to starting with EJA, I was a criminal lawyer. So my work at EJA also includes representing and advising forest activists and citizen scientists. So I have the very exciting job of giving you a bit of an overview tonight of the amendments that will be coming into effect in May, what that means and the impacts they'll have. So I will start with a bit of background. I'm sure a lot of you are already quite familiar with the laws and what to expect, but at the end of last year, towards the end of last year, the Sustainable Forests Timber Amendment Timber Harvesting Safety Zones Bill was passed. It amends the Sustainable Forests Timber Act, which is one of the pieces of legislation that applies to forestry operations in Victoria and specifically regulates activity in timber harvesting safety zones. And again, a bit of background, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, but a timber harvesting safety zone is a logging coop. It can extend 150 metres from the boundary of a logging coop and can include a public road as well, so quite a broad area. And timber harvesting activities in the Act is logging, it's salvage logging and regeneration burning. So the main types of offences that we typically see under the Act are entering or remaining in a timber harvesting safety zone and hinder, obstruct or interfere with timber harvesting operations with or without a prohibited item. And that can be by way of infringement notice or in court. And so last year when the bill was introduced to amend the laws, there was debate in Parliament in the lower and the upper house. There was a lot of discussion from both sides in support of the bill. There were concerns raised about workplace safety and in opposition of the bill, obviously concerns about democratic freedoms and stripping away the right to peaceful protest. And of course, it's always been EJA's view and the view of a lot of other community groups, social justice groups, legal organisations and other members of the community that the focus really should be on enforcing environmental laws to protect and restore country, climate and ecosystems and not on criminalising peaceful protest. So the bill was passed in August and the amendments will come into effect in May. And there are four main ways that the laws will change. Firstly, there will be significant increases in maximum penalties for offences under the Act, and that those penalties in some cases will triple, which is very significant and concerning. But importantly, I think it's good to note as well that they are maximum penalties. They're not necessarily an indication of the most likely penalty, but still very, very concerning amendments. And as Tuffy mentioned earlier, in some cases that's up to $21,000 in fines or 12 months imprisonment for the hinder, obstruct or interfere with timber harvesting operations with a prohibited thing. I should note as well that EJA and some other orgs will be working on putting together a bit of a guide and a fact sheet, so a lot of this information will be made available in hard copy for you and electronically before the amendments come into effect, so don't feel like you have to memorise all of this tonight. The second way the laws will be amended is the broadening of search and seizure powers. So authorised officers within a timber harvesting safety zone can have broader powers to search bags and vehicles and persons in and around timber harvesting safety zones if they believe that they are about to, they are committing or they have committed an offence. And that's a lot broader than the laws, what the laws are currently. There'll also be changes to what's defined as a prohibited thing under the Act, which includes will include things like a PVC pipe. And probably most concerningly, second to this increases in maximum penalties, is the introduction of banning notices. And that's an entirely new scheme under the Act. The effect of the banning notices will be they'll be able to ban people for 28 days from entering a timber harvesting safety zone, which really does have consequences for folks who are seeking to oversee what's happening in the forests. And we know this is a very political space and that now more than ever, citizen science is important, community oversight is important. So that's, again, quite a concerning amendment that will be made to the laws. Importantly, also infringement notices won't increase as a result of the amendment, so it is just offences under the Act that go to court. And also, these are strict liability offences, what's known as strict liability offences, which means that effectively an authorised officer charging someone with an offence isn't required to consider the reason that person has entered a timber harvesting safety zone. So that's not to say that the reason's not relevant and that it doesn't become relevant down the track, but it's not something that has to be considered at the time. So like I said, we will be developing fact sheets and a guide to put all of that information together so that it's readily accessible. We are extremely committed to supporting forest activists and citizen scientists going forward, especially after the amendments come into effect. So please feel free to get in touch anytime if you have any questions. There are lots of other community legal organisations in Victoria as well who are doing great work in this space and produce a lot of great resources. So there's lots of support out there, and we're always happy to hear from people as well. I think that's it from me.
Godfrey, you want to take it away? Godfrey from United Workers Union and Co-Power.
Thanks very much, Tuffy. And I too would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we come. And frankly, I'm still kind of angry that my ancestors got kicked off the commons by some dirty capitalists a couple of hundred years ago. That righteous anger is something that I stand in solidarity with. I want to do three things this evening. Number one, I just want to contextualise this attack on the right to organise for climate and the environment within a broader attack in Australia on our basic civil liberties over the last 30 years, but particularly with respect to an area that I have some experience in with respect, which is the labour movement. Number two, I just want to tease apart the false dichotomy that is presented between workplace safety and organising around the environment and climate that is presented or assumed in this piece of legislation. And then number three, just suggest some potential ways to organise on a class basis around climate and the environment that involves organising within the workplace. So just briefly, this attack on the right to organise with respect to climate and the environment can't be disentangled ultimately to what we have in Australia, which in the sphere of labour relations, we don't really have the freedom of association at law. We don't have free trade unions really at law. In this country, the Fair Work Act, the Fair Work brackets, Registered Organisations Act, close brackets, it runs for hundreds and hundreds of pages, plus 500 pages, which essentially regulates unions, and there's a whole bunch of regulations on top of that. That's not normal. The Japanese Act that regulates the conduct of trade unions has two clauses. The Canadian Act that registers that regulates trade unions runs for 13 pages in two languages. Even the UK Act that is the home of the Thatcher re-regulation of the labour market, you're talking about 150 pages. The freedom of association at Australian law is the inverse of what it is in international law. In international law, the freedom of association is essentially a positive and collective right. The right for workers to get together in a workplace across a sector, across an industry, and positively determine how they are going to get together and regulate their working life and fight for their interests. Under Australian law since 1996, it is individual and focused around regulating or protecting people from not doing things. It is Orwellian in the true sense of the term. And that flows through in terms of how we regulate taking action, the grounds on which people can take action. And this, to say that this is a thing, I know that we're talking about different jurisdictions here, but to say that this legislation around controlling environmental activists is for workplace safety when we have an IR regime that actively stops workers from taking into account their basic rights is, frankly, offensive. And there is not some strict... there is not a strict dichotomy between, okay, workplace safety and standing up for the right, standing up for the environment, standing up for a safe climate. We conducted a survey at United Workers Union through the UTS in 2019/2020. So before, well, after the bushfires, but before the floods, because now we mark time in terms of disasters, and that's just the era that we're in. So while the pandemic was on, after the fires, before the floods, 56.3% of our members who participated in that survey and a majority in every state and territory nationally of our members said to us, the climate change today, pre-floods, climate change is negatively impacting their working conditions. So climate is a thing that Australian workers are saying they are having to pay for. That is a threat to their safety. That is a threat to their take-home paying conditions. And so there is not some sphere over here where it's workplace safety and dirty environmentalists over there and the twain shall never meet and we've got to protect one from the other. If you don't care about the right to organise around climate, you do not care about workplace safety. And that is just a fact. That is a reality. And the key question is, where do we go from here and how do we do it? And for me, partly that is, how do we organise around climate as a class issue? And that comes down to how do people get to have a say and who pays? And so that's really just the old unionist tradition of bread and roses, who pays and who has a say. And I think there are a couple of ways through. One is around workplace safety itself, semi-ironically. Every Australian worker has the right to a safe workplace. Every worker has the right to elect their own health and safety reps, to be consulted about workplace safety, and to cease work where there's an immediate threat to their health and safety. So the right to strike doesn't just exist under the Fair Work Act. It exists as a matter of basic human dignity. And getting organised around safety at work is key. Taking control where we can as consumers and instituting some democracy into the energy system is also a really important thing, and it's part of the reason why I'm one of the co-founders of CoPower. It is unashamedly a project of democratisation, taking the bits of what we can do today, which is collectively bargaining with a licensed retailer, and using that to build a new world, which is doing stuff like having a pool of funds to help fund and protect people who are engaged in climate organising or funding other sorts of democratic transition projects. And the third thing is, even under the strictures of the Fair Work Act, it is incorrect to say that you can't bargain around climate under the Fair Work Act per se, but you can do it if you link it to terms of conditions of employment to the employment relationship. So I don't have time to really go through that, But that is a way through there.